Consolidation of Henry VII's position, 1485 to 1487. On September 3rd, 1485, Henry Tudor processed into London. The new monarch was met at Shoreditch by the mayor and aldermen of the City of London, who were wearing scarlet robes. They proceeded to St. Paul's, accompanied by crowds of sword-bearers and sergeants. The citizens of London provided processions and pageants along the route to demonstrate their goodwill towards the new king. At the huge cathedral, Henry heard prayers and a Te Deum after having presented his three standards, the banner of St. George, the red fiery dragon of Coldwaldra, and a dun cow. In depositing his banners in this way, he was consciously copying Edward IV's conduct after the Battle of Barnet. Establishing power, from Bosworth to London. Henry Tudor was proclaimed King of England by Lord Stanley on the battlefield at Bosworth. He knew little about his kingdom, and even less about kingship, yet he behaved like a king from the start. It was clear that the new king would be wise, prudent, and rely heavily on the friendship and loyalty of his companions from exile. He immediately declared that his reign started on the 21st of August. This was a politically astute announcement because it enabled him to consider any men who fought for King Richard III on the battlefield at Bosworth as traitors to King Henry VII. The punishment for treason among noblemen was attainment by acts of attainder. He also publicly rewarded some of his loyal servants, knighting 11 men on the actual battlefield. He then took action to start the consolidation of his kingship. He sent Sir Richard Willoughby to Sheriff Hutton in Yorkshire to secure Elizabeth of York and Edward, Earl of Warwick, and bring them both to London. He showed similar decisiveness in sending out a proclamation soon after the battle, making it clear to all Englishmen across the kingdom that Richard III was dead, and that Henry Tudor on the throne by the grace of God. Henry slowly made his way towards the capital city, taking care to avoid hasty decisions. He paused for a few days at St. Albans. This gave his royal servants time to prepare the triumphant entry into London. It also gave Henry a chance to reflect on the appointments to his new council and the structure of his government. He realised that it was vital to put both in place, for the early weeks of his reign might prove to be very difficult. In the council, he appointed Thomas Rotherham, Archbishop of York, first to be Chancellor of England, and then moved him to temporary treasurer at the Exchequer. Rotherham was an elderly, experienced churchman who had served within Yorkist government and was a very well recognised expert in public affairs. This stopgap appointment brought Henry VII time before he could bring in John Morton, Bishop of Ely, to be Chancellor of England, and the Yorkist Lord Dynam to be permanent treasurer at the Exchequer. He extended his reliance on able clerics by appointing Bishop Peter Courtenay to be Keeper of the Privy Seal, with responsibility for ensuring continuity of administration in the early stage of the reign, although this post was later given to a friend from exile, Ricky Fox. Henry exercised his prerogative right to distribute patronage very carefully. In many ways he was fortunate because he had few family demands for positions or titles. Tudor was the only child, so had no siblings to recognise, in contrast to the demands made by the extensive Woodville family on Edward IV's patronage. There was also little chance of immediate rebellion. The previous king, Richard III, had been widely disliked and died without an heir. Henry VII was related by his mother's second marriage to the Stanleys, the noble family that had gained most from events at Bosworth. This made it unlikely that Lord Stanley would rebel. Besides, there was genuine goodwill towards the new monarch. Many Englishmen and women warmly anticipated the promised marriage to Elizabeth of York as the restoration of the regime of Edward IV. Henry VII had to make a lot of important decisions in the days after Bosworth. He was required to take counsel on these matters, but was not obliged to follow that counsel. Many of these early decisions were made by the new king in consultation with his close, intimate group of friends and family. His mother, Lady Margaret Beaufort, his uncle, Jasper Tudor, his stepfather, Lord Stanley, and John de Vere, the Earl of Oxford. He also considered his royal household. Sir William Stanley became Lord Chamberlain, but most senior posts were granted to men who had shared the king's exile, including Reginald Bray, Charles Daubeny, Richard Guildford, Thomas Lovell, and John Wriothesley. These men were personal friends, courtiers, and also members of the king's council. Contemporaries regarded them as the most influential politicians in the kingdom.